Welcome to the Leader, Manager, Coach podcast, where we share knowledge, philosophies, wisdom, and insight to help you on your journey in both sport and life. Introducing your host, Rob Riles.
Hello, and welcome along to the Leader, Manager, Coach podcast. Welcome along, it's Rob Riles welcoming you to another edition. Well, in today's program, I'm really fortunate to be joined by somebody from across the pond who's given up his valuable time to be with us on Leader Manager Coach. Now, this gentleman is somebody that has a distinguished career in the military and has got a really unusual kind of approach to, I don't know, let's call it self-development. I've read one of his books, and I believe it's been an Amazon bestseller, and it inspired me to ask him if he'd come on the podcast. So I'm just going to tell you just a short biography about him, and I'm going to ask him to put me right if anything I say is not correct. And now we're talking to Dominic Teach, and Dominic is somebody who guides goal-oriented individuals towards success using techniques and strategies that he's gained from his career as a fighter pilot. I know he's been a military instructor in the world of flying aeroplanes and assists other pilots. He also assists business owners, entrepreneurs, and other instructors using really practical, short, and insightful steps that he's learned on his own journey. He's the author of multiple titles, including the bestseller Single Seat series, and again, guides those looking to define or redefine their purpose in life with impactful stories from his life as a warrior in the air, as he puts it. So Dominic, welcome to Leader Manager Coach.
Thanks for having me, Rob. Excited to be here.
Good. So I'm always interested in people's stories, Dominic. Did you always know you wanted to be a fighter pilot, or is that something that kind of grew on you later on?
You know, I think it was something that grew early on, and just based on the title of your show, Leader Manager Coach, I think a lot of us underestimate the value that we have when we coach the younger generation that's coming up and that aspires to do that. And I think for me, there's no pilots in my family. There's no Air Force officers in my family. I mean, I was definitely a first. And so being interested in airplanes was one thing. But then, it's such a small thing. But I still remember to this day, my dad and I built a fighter jet on our kitchen table at my great-grandfather's house when I was 7 years old. And I still have that little model to this day. But as a seven-year-old kid, I never thought that I couldn't fly fighter jets. I had no idea how to do it. But it was just something that I told myself as I was growing up, I'm either going to be a Major League Baseball player or I'm going to fly fighter jets.
Nothing in between, huh? I wanted them too.
Yeah, and I never really had anybody tell me, no, you can't do that definitively. Yeah. And I think that's super important, is that, you know, obviously if you have massive medical problems, medical issues that you're fighting with, and you know, what's funny is that somebody said, I grew up wanting to be a professional soccer player. And it was a book that I read, and I think he was a biplegic or something like that. There was no physical way he could be a professional soccer player. So he started a business, and then he bought a soccer team. So then he got to be on the field and associate with the soccer players every single day, because that was his passion and that's what he wanted to do. So there's always a different way to crack the nut.
There's always a way, pal. Yeah, absolutely. So so just so I've got a little bit of the background. So you were a fighter jet pilot for a period of time, and then, because I want to get to like your authorship and to talk about your work at the minute, really. So how long did you do that for, Dominic?
Yeah, so I was a civilian instructor pilot during college and then after college for a number of years. And then I went into, I got into the service through the officer training corps. So I went to training that way, not while I was in college. Like I'd say most of the people that are in the military go either through the service academy or through a four-year institution. So I had already gotten my degree and done all my stuff. And I actually joined and had all my civilian ratings. And then I went through military pilot training, and I'm still currently... I've been flying fighter jets for about 17 years now. So I'm still currently in the military. I'm a reservist right now. So I'm actually a full-time instructor pilot flying F-16s in the reserves. And it's my dream job. It's freaking sweet.
Well, that's great to hear, because not many people get to do the dream job. Let's be honest about it. How difficult was it to pass the relevant test examinations to be allowed to, you know, sit in that seat and do what you need to do?
I think it depends on every person. I'm not extremely good at taking written tests, but if you put me in a simulator or an airplane, things just make more sense to me because it's hands-on. I've always liked being outside and playing actual sports versus, you know, just lifting weights in the gym kind of gets dull to me. So I need to do something that, you know, maybe is with other people, like a team sport or even just a sport by myself. But in regards to the test, the academic tests, you know, I obviously passed them and I did well enough on them. But by no means was I a 100% kind of student on written tests. I had to study quite a bit to pass those during the flight training portion. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the bigger thing is that there's a mountain to climb before you even get accepted to the military. I think that was the tough part for me, is that I spent a couple of years applying to even get selected to go to officer training, and my paperwork from the recruiter's office got lost 3 times. And it's not like, oh, we just lost a little file. It's months of work of submitting documents. This is back when obviously like internet and or email was kind of a newer thing. Text messaging was brand new. So you couldn't just digitally sign something online. I mean, a lot of times I was driving, you know, two and a half hours to get to the recruiter's office to drop off paperwork. And that was the bigger test for me, was how bad do I want this? And I think after the second time my paperwork got lost, I really had kind of a more or less a come to Jesus of like, you know, what am I doing this for? And what's the bigger why? And clearly I found that because I'm here now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So is there like a statistic for how many people start training and how many people pass at the end of it? Like they say, like in the Marines and the parachute regiment in the UK, that like there's, I don't know what the stats are, but they're pretty frightening, really. It's like 20% of people who still there at the end of it, you know?
Yeah. So pilot training, I'll just give you the statistics from my class. I think the, and not every class is the same. Back when I was going through, by and large, most people wanted to go to fly fighter jets. They just thought it was the cool thing to do. That didn't mean that the top graduate in the class every once in a while would want to go fly like the C-17 and do a tactical mission in like a cargo jet. And I'm not downplaying those career fields, because I've ridden in one of those airplanes and they're a pretty incredible airplane. However, in my class, I started out with about 30 students. And after the first phase of training, we were down to maybe 22. So we lost 8 in the first half of training. Mm-hmm. And then by the time we got to track night, so we didn't have our wings yet. That's basically halfway through, they go, okay, here's who we're going to, you know, put in the fighter track. Here's the heavy track. These guys are going to C-130s and these guys are going to helicopters. So there's these different tracks. You get all farmed out to them. And then out of my class, I was one of 3 to go the fighter track out of the 30 students that started. And that's kind of how it shook out. So I think it was less about washing people out and getting rid of them. Mostly because by the time somebody gets to pilot training, they've already gone through a 4-year degree. They usually have at least a little bit of flying experience. They go through what's called flight screening. So they've already flown another airplane that screens them out. So there's already a bunch of screening processes that have happened. And yes. So when they start, it's just a matter of, I mean, the airplane that you fly it has a jet engine on it with a propeller on the front. It's a turboprop airplane. It can pull G's. It's got an ejection seat. It can fly upside down. And if you can't, if you have error or motion sickness, that's one of the big ones. I think in our class, there was, I think at least 3 or 4 of the 8 that didn't make it through, just could not, they were throwing up every time they flew. So,
And is that something, Dominic, that there's virtually it's not something that they can control easily or learn to deal with. It's like a difficult thing to overcome because it's a physiological thing that's beyond control.
You can actually deal with it a little bit. You're talking to the wrong person. I've felt a little woozy in the airplane less than a handful of times. And, I've been flying over 20 years now. So I'm probably the wrong person to talk to it, but I know some guys that have had, that have thrown up in the airplane that have had air sickness, issues, and they're able to overcome that. But some guys can't. And clearly you wouldn't want to be a passenger in an airplane where you knew you're going to take off and the pilot was going to be throwing up front. So that's kind of a requirement. Now in the civilian world, it's much less of an issue because you're not flying upside down.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just taking off and landing. And if you've flown in a civilian airplane, it's not much different. In fact, it's probably easier up front.
So look, you're a great guy to talk to because you're a coach and you teach other people and you guide other people and facilitate their growth. And one of the things that I do is I coach young footballers and I'm kind of interested in the parallels. And so we got in pro football and soccer in the UK, there's this massive cohort of young players, and it's only a real small percentage that will get through to play on the pro sport. And it's probably the same in the NFL and the NBA and all that. So how do you approach your training and your instruction in dealing with young people with stars in their eyes? Because I think that's what people have. It's a dream, isn't it? It's not like, oh, I want to be really practical about this. It's something that it's an emotional thing. And there must be lots of challenges on the way that you as an instructor have to deal with, Dominic, if that's not too broad a question.
Yeah, I think just, my instructional capabilities and techniques have definitely changed over the years.
Okay.
and you've probably seen that in yourself as you get maybe a little bit more experience. You kind of know a little bit more of what to expect. You're introduced to a lot of different personalities. And I think one of the most important things that I've heard is that we have, the military has been training pilots for a long time. So we have a syllabus. So we have literally a course map. And I think, anybody that is trying to be a professional football player or soccer player or whatever, there's going to be a course map that kind of guides you along that. And then there's the other piece of it is that, I've been asked this question before is like, well, how do you find somebody that can coach or mentor you? And I think that's the wrong question when you're starting out. I think the better route, which is the one that as I've asked more and more people about this, it's less about going out to search for a coach or a mentor. And it's more about if you're starting out, just that hunger, because somebody that has that hunger. And I think on one of your podcasts or one of your things I was watching, you talked about the character behind someone that is hungry for that. And that was me. And that is really difficult to fake. And people might not see through it initially, but if you're a coach, Robbie, you're going to look at somebody and go, dude, you're just not hungry. Like do you really want this? It's like a boxing movie. And I forget the name, but the boxing movie where the guy's like, he didn't start winning matches until he had to put food on the table for his family. So there's a much bigger why are you here? And why are you hungry for this? Mm. And that character over time will just completely fall apart if it's for the wrong thing. So I think the person, if I was kind of coaching somebody or kind of looking at my previous self, I'd be like, why do you want to be a pilot? And if it's for money, that's not a very good reason, because it's not a timeless reason. A bigger reason is I want to feed my family, or I want to do something bigger in my life, and aviation allows me to see the world that allows me to do this. And there's like a bigger why. It's a bigger story. So I think that's more for the person that's starting out, is that you need a roadmap, and there's probably some steps, but mine are much different than the steps that I took are much different. But I think the important thing is there's the hunger there and there's action behind it. That character, I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I know that I started college and I started taking aviation related classes, and I started flying, and I started just doing things that were down that track. And at the same time, I was playing on a club baseball team. So I was kind of doing the things that I was like, I want to be a professional baseball player and I want to fly fighter jets, one of the other. So let me just start doing both of them. And as I started along that path, one kind of fell apart and the other one kind of kept going. So I think if you're starting out, there's a roadmap everywhere. Everybody's path is a little bit different, but get going, start, and somebody will coach you. And that's what I found, is I found Dr. Bob Wakefield at the civilian airfield. And he was the one that I sat down with my dad there in the room. And he's the first one that we talked to that was just, he basically said, let's start flying. And I almost fell out of my chair. I was 16 years old and I just could not believe that I was going to be allowed to fly an airplane. And so that was kind of the next step. Now, fast forward, 25 years now sitting in this seat and having been an instructor for like well over half of my life and seeing a lot of students. I was a civilian flight instructor too, before a military instructor.
Right.
And I think the biggest thing that I learned as a coach or a mentor is that, and this isn't my idea, a retired fighter pilot here that works as a contractor, he said that Nasty Grimwood, he's like, I need to give credit to his name because nobody will know who he is, but he's the one that told me this. He said, the syllabus is built, but it's built for this course of training, but it fits no one student. So that's your job as the instructor, is to fit that syllabus to the student. And I think like the kind of the nuts and bolts is, if you're starting out, you need to get going and take action, and that hunger needs to be there. And the coach and the mentor will find you because they'll see that in you. And it's just a matter of time, right? And it'll take time, but somebody will see you and they will help you along. And then as the coach or the mentor, it's important to know that when I'm instructing someone or when I'm coaching someone, there is a course map that I think might work. However, it needs to be tailored to every single individual person. And that's the tough part. And that's as you get more experience, you're able to kind of see the a little bit bigger picture. And when you're younger, I look back and just laugh at some of the things I did as a young instructor pilot. And that's just part of learning, right? Where I started really excelling as a fighter pilot instructor was when I learned to laugh at myself, because I was making mistakes as an instructor that were affecting the student. And that'll happen.
Look, coaching or instructing, as we call it here in the UK, it's not for everybody, is it? So do you know why it grabbed you? Do you know why it called you? Do you know why you got into it? Because it's not for everybody, Dominic.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, I've met some phenomenal fighter pilots that are, they've gone through the Top Gun weapons school and all that kind of stuff. And they're supposed to be the best of the best instructors. And some of them are so good that they want to be the tactical fighter pilot and they are just phenomenal. But sometimes their instructional capability is not quite there, you know? So I think, I don't know what really grabbed me. I've always liked, I started out when I was 14 years old, I got hired as a downhill ski instructor. So I was teaching people how to downhill ski at a really young age. And I also grew up playing music. So I was teaching people how to play like bluegrass violin music. I was coaching, high school math while I was in college.
Okay.
And then I got into, I've never really even thought of that before. I just have always liked to coach and to just, if somebody is hungry, I've helped a number of young kids actually start their own business. And it just, because I can see that. And I know, Rob, you'll know, because I don't have, and I'll tell people now this right up front, is I'm not going to push you at all. I mean, I might push you as you get going to go in a certain direction, but initially that inertia needs to come from you. I don't need to do any of it. I'll guide you a little bit, but I'm not going to motivate a pile of jello. Like, I'm not going to just sit there and poke you. You need to do that. But I don't know. I've just have always been in a job or usually on the side, at least in coaching or instructing or some flavor of that.
Are you struggling to find that extra edge to help you stand out above the crowd? Separating yourself from the rest is often about personal leadership. Achieve your true potential and become who you really can be. The Leader Manager Coach Pro Course is a unique membership accessing the knowledge and wisdom from history's greats that will help you develop both personally and professionally to make you truly stand out. The Leader Manager Coach Pro Course. Access now at patreon.com Leader Manager Coach.
Are you in your line of work, Dominic? Are you in a situation where you have to make cutthroat, harsh decisions on whether somebody's good enough, or is that just down to whether they tick so many boxes out of so many boxes? Is that something that there's no argument, or is there like a, because in soccer here in the UK, we'll have meetings where there's a group of coaches who sit down and they'll basically almost decide whether a young person's going to be given a contract or not, you know, and it's like a life, or it can destroy people, you know. Is that sure. The same in your line of work or not?
Yeah, 100%. So the students get to us and they've already gone through a few mountains full of training. They've gone to college and gotten their 4-year degree. They've gone through flight screening. They've gone through undergraduate pilot training, which is months and months and months and months, like a year of training. And then they go through Introduction to Fighter Fundamentals, which is another program that screens them before they get us here. They've gone through survival, evasion, resistance training, water survival, parachute training. So they've done tons of training to even
get to us. So they're resilient people when they get to you.
Yes, they've been through quite a bit. And honestly, the majority of them should pass our program. Now, I think you said a word, and the word is group. So you guys will all sit down together and decide this. It's not a single person. And I think that's an important piece, is that yes, they did, you know, when a student gets to that point where they're starting to struggle mightily, the one difference that I've seen with those students that make it and those that don't is their attitude. And that's a very difficult situation to overcome as a student when you are in a fighter squadron where everybody is type A, everybody's there to win. You know, the squadron is packed with instructor pilots that have gone before you. The other students potentially are doing better than you. And now you're busting rides and you're down and out. And this literally these students, and I've talked to these guys, the students that make it and those that don't, it largely depends on their attitude. There is a little bit of aptitude that needs to go into that, but their attitude is, because that attitude allows you to see those different opportunities when you are so like in the trenches taking grenades.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So yes, we are in a position as instructors to shape and influence that student's like future outcome. And then there are some students that just, and I've unfortunately flown with them, and had to make the tough decision, you know, of, you know, they've gotten to this, it's not like just one flight and boom, you're out. I mean, it's a number of like probably about a month and a half of time, right? It's just going on, it's grinding. And then we all sit down as an instructor pilot cadre and we just kind of go, you know, what the difference is you need to be somebody that when we plug you in as a wingman, you're helping the team. And if you're a danger to yourself, I mean, we can't have that on our shoulders. And oh, by the way, if you kill yourself in the jet, then that's going to be on my conscience. So that's kind of always, if I find myself coming back and as I'm sitting there before I go in for the debrief and I say, man, if this guy, can this guy fly this fighter jet by himself safely, effectively? Can he be a competent wingman? Can he execute the tactics like we want? Can he bring the jet back in one piece? Can he do all these things? And then, oh, by the way, is he going to kill me or kill himself? And like those types of questions, they start to enter my mind. Like that's when I'm like, we're in kind of different territory here. But you know, you mentioned it, as a group, we usually sit down and just discuss, because there is a lot of subjectivity into it.
So have to have these difficult conversations. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's even, so for me, I'm more of a underdog,
cheerleader,
right?
Give him a chance.
Because I've been an underdog my whole life. And there's people have given me endless, countless chances. So I'm usually the one in the room where I'm like, dudes, I think this guy could make it. And here's why. His attitude, his, you know, let's give him another shot. But then there's also been some students where I'm like, his attitude is good enough, but his aptitude is just not there. Mm. And those are really tough conversations to have.
Ones, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great little conversation. That's great. I'd love to move on because of the time and to ask you about how did you evolve and develop your brand of your single seat wisdom and you know, the work that you're kind of doing with your writing and stuff, because it's brilliant. It resonates so well with leader, manager, coach, particularly on myself. So how did that evolve, Dominic?
Yeah, so the single seat wisdom book series started as kind of a hobby. And so at that point, so I started a company called Single Seat Mindset, because we're single seat fighter pilots. There's a trained mindset that goes into that. Just like a professional soccer player or professional football player, you don't just step onto that field and become that person. It's trained. It takes years of time, right? It's coaching. Mm. And then I think it's a learned behavior, right? You have to learn all of those things. Just like more of an analogy for me, stepping into the batter's box as a professional baseball player, you're not going to hit a 100-mile-an-hour fastball without having all the training behind it. So as COVID kind of swept across the globe, we found our students, we had one of the one class that just struggled more than we've ever seen before.
Right.
And we very quickly realized that the social aspect of being a fighter pilot, being, you know, telling stories, coaching each other, being in the fighter squadron, that was such a huge part of our culture. During that time, I was actually mountain biking one morning, and I was kind of up in the foothills, and I looked out over the city, and I was like, man, what do we do for this? So I just started sending the class a little 2-minute email message once a week. And my pitch to them was, it's going to be short, it'll be impactful, and it'll usually have a short little message in there, and it'll have the, well, how do I fix this? Or what do I do type of message? So that's really where it started, were those short little messages. Well, after the fifth or sixth class that came through, I got really sick of sending these emails manually. So having started businesses before this, and, you know, I own a real estate business as well, I built a website, and then I built a capture form, and then they could go sign up by themselves. Yeah. And they could, you know, I automated it all. And then from there, I started talking to some other fighter pilots that I knew, and I said, hey, you know, when you retire, you've got a really cool story. Like, what, that story's going to die. Let's put it on paper. And that's kind of how we went from single seat mindset of being kind of a hobby and me helping the students to then starting to talk to some business owners in the real estate arena. And they were the ones that told me this stuff is very leverageable for business owners, entrepreneurs, sports players. Mm-hmm. All of these messages are very leverageable, yeah, that you've learned absolutely as a fighter pilot. And so then we started capturing stories from fighter pilots, and we wrote the Single Seat Wisdom Volume 1, and we made it Volume 1 just to kind of open the door to go, what if we want to do Volume 2? So we did Volume 2, and then the government actually here in the US just approved literally this week. Nobody else knows this. I haven't even put it on the social media chats yet, but they just approved this week Volume 3. So all the chapters are in, we're editing them, and we're going to publish those Volume 3 here on November 11th, Veterans Day.
It's great. What a great little story. Didn't expect it that. Starting from an email to help people out. Respect. And it's going to might even trump Chicken Soup for the Soul if you keep going, bud.
I don't know. That's what a lot of people have said, in the sense that they're like, dude, this is just like Chicken Soup. It's short.
It's brilliant.
It's a little story, and then there's a little chunk of wisdom at the end. And no, I'm not going to even try to compare myself to Chicken Soup.
No, I love it. I got to ask you a question. It's two parts of the question. It's your nickname is Slice, yeah?
Yeah.
And now everybody in the book, and I've only got Volume 1, but everybody's got a nickname. Is that now in soccer, like it's rife in the inside of professional football? I'm not sure if it's the same in the women's game or the female side of sport or whatever, but men are kind of got this thing about just get a nickname within like one day. You know, you've got a nickname, you'll have a nickname, and I love it. So number one, how did you get your nickname? And number two, can you tell us a little bit about the other nicknames for the other guys? Is it something that they had automatically, or how did they evolve and all that? Do you know the stories behind it?
Yeah, so it's not an automatic thing for sure. you kind of earn your nickname in the fighter pilot community, just like you do in, you know, the police force or any professional, you know, sports. I had my own nickname when I was playing baseball, club baseball back in the day. It wasn't Slice. but so I got my nickname because I was stationed in Japan and I was flying in our squadron mascot was the samurai. So, I went out as a young fighter pilot and, I broke a training rule and almost ran into the instructor pilot that day with my aircraft. I was pointing at him too long. We were essentially doing, for lack of a better term, we were essentially doing dogfighting. So close in visual maneuvering, and we turned and pointed at each other and we're trying to take the first shot. And I'm trying to take the first shot so that I can, you know, win the fight essentially. And I pointed at my instructor pilot too long and we had a very close pass. And so that's the first piece of that, is that I almost died, you know, trying to win that fight. I broke a training rule. It was a hard lesson learned. It was maybe a little bit embarrassing, but more of just a good lesson. I lived, let's learn from it. The second piece of that is that fighter pilots have essentially a naming ceremony. So the pilots that are named within the fighter squadron will all get together and they will usually just bring up all of the bad things about you. So for me, it wasn't very difficult. I had a lot of bad things about me. So they put all these names on the board and then there's they kind of go through and weed out some of the names, and there's some stupid human tricks you have to do and some other things that go on behind, closed doors, like any tight-knit group. And then they decided to give me the call sign Slice, for many reasons, but one of them was I tried to slice my, instructor pilot in half, and we were part of the samurai squadron. But yes, I think to answer your question is that no, you don't show up on day one. In fact, it's probably a number of months as a new instructor pilot. Your call sign is actually FNG for the effing new guy. So it's just you're FNG. And so you have to kind of earn your call sign, and usually your call sign, sometimes it's a play on words, sometimes it's an acronym, but usually it's because of something stupid that you did. In my case,
You need to try to kill your instructor, nearly.
Yeah.
That's cool. Thank you for that, Dominic. What about, if I can ask you about the Anna Schindler Foundation, is that, have I got that right? Have I said that right?
Yeah. The Anna Schindler Foundation. So Anna Schindler is actually my first cousin, and I think the way you pronounce it is hepatoblastoma. It's some sort of liver cancer, I believe, but she got liver cancer when she was really young, so probably 6 years old, and she went into the hospital, and her parents, Polly and Joe Schindler, my aunt and uncle, essentially took a 12-on, 12-off shift every day while she was in the hospital going through these treatments. Anna was on the upswing, and then she wasn't, so she passed. And the big lesson from that was, yes, it was extremely painful to lose a child and all of the things. So Anna passed, I think, around the time she was seven. Well, Polly and Joe Schindler started the Anna Schindler Foundation. And what they do is they build, for lack of a better term, kind of Ronald McDonald style homes that families can live in while their kids are going through these treatments. Uh-huh. Because living in a hospital is it's hell on earth.
Mission, yeah.
So I think that's the bigger picture, is that they started something much bigger than that. And then they actually ended up adopting a kid that was the same age as Anna that went through cancer treatments and made it, and they adopted him. So he's now, Blake is now part of their family.
Oh, beautiful.
So yeah, it's a really cool story. And we, early on, I decided when we started Single Seat Mindset, the company, that we would give all of the proceeds from that company, from the books, from any proceeds we get, we give them to the Anna Schindler Foundation.
Beautiful.
All those proceeds go to helping families that are, no kidding, living that hell of their kid going through, you know, cancer treatments. And then they've got Polly and Joe Schindler that have lived through it themselves, and they have this big community behind them to help them through that.
What a beautiful story. And credit to you guys for giving back in such an amazing way. Look, Dominic, I want to kind of wrap this up and kind of bring the things together. Look, I'm listening to your story and I'm listening to all the things you've said, and this is a great there's so much in what you've said. You know, you had a dream as a kid. You were focused on a couple of things that you wanted to do, and you never had these doubts, and you took action from an early age, whether you knew what you were doing or not. You kind of just got on with it, and like you say, your mentors, your coaches kind of appeared in your life. You got into your, one of the things dropped away and the other one got legs, if you like, and you got into your training, and from what you've said, the biggest thing that you brought to it and the thing that got you through was your own desire and hunger beyond, above and beyond your ability. And that was what got you through. And that's what you're saying about the people that you instruct as well. That's kind of seems to be, if I've got the right message, that's the kind of golden thread that is the thing that kind of gets people through, which is beautiful, because I couldn't agree more. We've got in professional soccer in the UK, we've kind of got, we call it a four-cornered model, which is like, how are you physically? How are you technically and tactically, you know, with the ball? And how are you socially and psychologically? Because if you're a bad apple and you can't get on with people, then you're gonna struggle. And you know, if you speak to elite coaches and you say, look, as long as you've got somebody who's got an ability, it doesn't have to be the very best in the world, but if they have an ability to perform, it's the psychological aspect that will make them world class, which I think kind of fits in really, really strongly with what you've said. You've evolved this beautiful single seat wisdom, a brand that's kind of got legs and has got such a beautiful giving part to it, which is amazing. I kind of want to just say to you, or ask you at the end of this, Dominic, kind of to bring this together. If you were advising young people, young players, young aspiring sports people, soccer players, with your wisdom of your life, you're flying and you're instructing, probably asking you too much really to put it into you know, one sentence, but kind of what would you say to them and to help them on the way?
So what I would say to my younger self, because usually if somebody is very hungry, and especially if you're going into professional sports, being a fighter pilot, any really like peak performing group of people, and this could be doctors, lawyers, attorneys, I mean, all of those have their own edge to them, if you will. So they don't necessarily need to be physical in the physical domain. They could be mental too. I think the younger me needed to know that hunger, there's a fire behind it. And that fire can burn other people. And you may not be doing it intentionally, but I think the important piece that I missed as a young guy was just forgiving myself and then going back and just immediately mending those relationships. So you talked about the social aspects of soccer players, just like fighter pilots. If you can't get along socially, if you don't have what we call a good bar act, right? If you're a liability in the group, yeah. It's not fun. Really,
no,
it isn't. It's like, messy, oh, yeah. There goes that guy, dude. He's going to get freaking hammered and do something stupid again. Now we got to babysit you. So if you don't have a good act and you're not socially capable, that's a problem. So, and I'm not saying, I'm not like a pro at it or anything. There's a lot of guys that are just better at being fighter pilots. So for me, that fire could tend to burn people. And I think I needed a healthy dose of humility. And what do I do, or how do I make that better, is just know that along your journey, somebody's going to get pissed off and you're going to make mistakes. And I think it was Tony Robbins that said, failure is an event, not a person. So just realize you did not fail. You're still on your journey. You're still on your path, but those failures, there's going to be way more failures than you're going to have successes. You're going to miss a lot more corner kicks than you are going to make them. Yeah. You're going to have, hopefully, eventually you'll have a lot of good landings and bring the aircraft back in one piece, but you'll never have a perfect sortie. Yeah. You'll never have a perfect flight. So I think for me, just learning early on to, when I got fired up, because I was a very fiery young lieutenant. And having worked in the civilian world, I brought a different flavor to that as well that the military didn't have for the young guys. And I needed to go back and mend those relationships that I burned, you know, whether it was an interaction or whatever, and just be like, hey, I jacked up. It's my fault. I'm sorry. I want to move on. Please forgive me. Like, here's how I'm making it better. And just do that. Yeah. And unfortunately, it took me a handful of years to get to that point. So if I could have started that early on, I think I would have had, it would have made life a lot easier. I think I would have still gotten my goals, but just that humility to go, dang it, that was my fault. And just to realize that. And I knew it a lot of times, but then I got scared from, you know, going and confronting that person that usually is a higher ranking officer or somebody that's been around a lot longer, and just go, hey, dude, I jacked up. I'm sorry. Like, I just want to move on. And I'm going to work really hard to never let that happen again.
That's a great example of insight and beautiful human humility and a willingness to pick yourself up, recognize where you're not so great, and do the only thing you can and try and do something positive about it. So I think that's a great place to leave our listeners with, Dominic. So I want to thank you very much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure, and bless you, my friend, for sharing your wisdom.
Thanks, Rob. I really enjoyed it.